Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Bernie Siplicki on 101.3 ESPN and 960 The Zone. Sports Saturday is powered in part by Bagels Plus, with over 18 different varieties of bagels coming today for fresh and hot homemade goodness. Top Hat Entertainment, helping you with all your party needs, from DJs to inflatables. They have it all. Superb Cupcakes, the gourmet cupcakery who specializes in taste. Yum! Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining the right mortgage can be. Periwinkles in downtown Burlington. Visit them online at periwinkles.com. And now, it's Sports Saturday.
What's up, everybody? It's 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com, the 101.3 ESPN app on this frigid Saturday morning in the Champlain Valley. I'm sure it's not better in Plattsburgh, either, our listeners, either in northern New York. Brady Farkas, Jeff Paul, you here? Bernie Siplicki, are you here? Wait, Dave Hunter's got to be on the board today. Dave, are you here? All right, Brady's filling in for Jeff. We got Jake Kent making his return. The music doesn't need to be on anymore. Jake Kent making his return here. He's in for Bernie. We got Action Jackson, our intern, on the phones today. Look, we may be different people, but this is no B team, Jake. Welcome back to the show. How you doing?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm good. Football season's over. It's kind of gearing back up again, so it's been a little while since I was here, but it's good to be here.
Football season was over for about 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. It's a year-round now.
We are jam-packed today. A lot of NFL talk. We got the combine going on. We got free agency set to start in a week. The phone lines are always open, 802-655-6672. We have, again, as I said, a jam-packed show. Full guest list. Kyle Glazer, Baseball America, he's going to stop by at 1040. Let us know if David Price is going to miss any time this year. What do the Red Sox have down the farm? Do they have anybody that can help? Because they're going to need some starts from some people not in their top five starting rotation out of spring training. 11:20, we're going to get the scoop on UVM men's basketball and the University of New Hampshire. Those two teams meet Monday, America East semifinals at Patrick Gymnasium. We're going to talk to Brendan Glasheen, who's broadcasted a number of UNH games. Jake, did you have a good Friday?
I had a great Friday. How was yours?
Well, it was interesting. Okay. So I worked until about 7:30,
yep,
and then spent the rest of the night at the emergency vet.
Okay.
So
never good.
Never good. Dog will be okay.
Good.
Doesn't appear anything that is going to require anything more than some medicine and monitoring and things like that. But about 3.5 hours in the emergency vet, so an epic Friday. But just glad the guy, just glad Spike is going to be okay.
What kind of dog is Spike?
He's a Feist mix.
Okay.
Have you heard of a Feist mix?
I don't know what that is.
It's a Southern Kentucky hunting dog.
Okay.
Now, there's multiple things at play here. One, I've never had a dog. My girlfriend has had dogs her whole life.
I see.
So we rescued this dog.
Oh,
great,
okay. Nice.
Great thing. So when you rescue a dog, as everyone out there who rescues a dog knows, you're never quite sure on,
sure, yeah,
on all the things going involved there.
No.
A little bit of coonhound, a little bit of maybe some Jack Russell Terrier. He's, sure, a hodgepodge of everything.
Yeah.
He's great. Was feeling a little down yesterday, but I think he's going to be good. I know he's going to be good. It's not I think, I know he's going to be good. So
that's what we like to hear.
Hung out at the emergency vet. They were nice, great people over in Essex/Williston. Had the office queued up on Netflix while we were waiting around, so we were good. We made it through the night, and I tell you what, I don't know if I have ever experienced more cold in a short period of time than when we walked out of that emergency vet last night at about 11:30.
It's brutal.
I mean, I have been cold for like full days,
sure,
or like prolonged exposure to being outside. I don't know that I can ever remember getting that cold that quickly as I was last night and then subsequently this morning.
No, I feel the same way. I mean, I think the coldest I've ever been, skiing at Smug's more than a couple of years ago now as a teenager, rode the lift up. It was one of those days the lift was on and off because of wind already. They were turning the thing off. We were trying to get some runs in. We get to the top of the highest peak there at Madonna, and they pull us off the lift. They say, look, it's -60 with the wind chill. You can't even take a run. And we had to go spend the afternoon. We had to sit in the warming hut until they cleared us to actually just get off the mountain. And I've been cold since then. I just haven't stopped.
-60 on the wind chill, and then you're going down a hill.
That's
had to be like a... negative 120.
And yeah, and I was young, and I may or may not have been dressed properly based on what people have told me.
So were you drinking? So were you?
No. I was young. Yeah.
Oh, like really young?
Yeah, like a teenager. Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, if you'd been drinking, that warms up everybody a little bit.
Right, negative 60, no problem.
But I tell you what, now, I've been colder for like full days.
That's the part that's hard.
And prolonged exposure. I played a college baseball game my freshman year, and I was at Oswego, which is right on Lake Ontario, so it gets super cold there. But we were playing at SUNY Fredonia, which is right near Buffalo. It's right on the shores of Lake Erie.
Yeah.
It was 33 with a 23-degree wind chill. And
oh, man.
We played two nine-inning games. So that takes, 3 hours each game. So that's 6 hours just of game time.
At least, yeah.
An hour and a half out on the field before the game starts. That's 7.5 hours. A half hour in between games is 8. And then 15 minutes or so after the game. So we're outside for like 8.5 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
And Fredonia, they didn't have dugouts that fit an entire team in them. They really, really make their side of the field look great and the opponent's side look awful. So I was sitting outside for most of the game. That was maybe the coldest I've ever been.
Did you have to throw?
Not that game.
Okay.
I played a game. We were played at St. Lawrence, which is up near the Canadian border in New York also. Division I hockey school, UVM, you know, can play them. It was 19 degrees air temperature.
Oh, my goodness.
No wind, but it was sunny. So that 19 felt like a balmy 31.
What time of year is this taking place?
Early April. This was like April 5th, probably.
That is cold.
And then the coldest game I ever pitched in, I pitched at SUNY Cortland. It was 33 and snowing.
Oh, good.
It was actually snowing. That worked to my advantage, though. Cortland was far better than me. They were number one in the country. Having the batters be uncomfortable was the only thing I had to keep me going in that game. Went 6 innings, 2 earned runs against the number one team in the nation. So it was pretty.
You thrive in the cold.
I thrive when the hitters.
Your element.
I thrive when the hitters are uncomfortable. It is Sports Saturday. Brady Farkas and Jake Ken are in for Jeff and Bernie on 101.3 ESPN. Again, 802-655-6672. NFL Combine is going on right now. It's in Indianapolis. It's been going on here for a few days. It'll continue on over the weekend. Quarterbacks are running the 40 today. Are you into the NFL Combine?
The short answer is yes.
Are you watching it on NFL Network?
No, I'm not doing that. I watched a little bit of golf yesterday throughout my day. With my job, I get to browse a little bit of stuff online. So I was listening to golf. I did not listen to Combine. I just can't bring myself quite to that. That being said, there's few things I love more than offensive linemen 40s. Fat guy 40s are the most entertaining thing they're going. Two 300-pound-plus offensive linemen under 5-second 40s. Huge day at the Combine.
That's a big day for those offensive linemen. So for the teams that are looking to bring back the speed option, there might be some options there.
There's some argument to be made with all the pass catching running backs. You know, guards are becoming a little bit of a priority, and if these guys can run, you know, we're talking a 4.97 40-yard dash for a 310-pound lineman, there might be an argument to say, maybe I'm joking, but it could be important.
The Combine's going on right now. Free agency kicks in next week on March 9th. Are you more in, and I want some opinions on this, 802-655-6672, you're a Patriot fan, you're a Giant fan, you're a Steeler fan, Eagle fan, whatever it is. Are you more into the combine, the draft, and prospecting, or are you more into the established names of the free agency period?
Yeah, I have to imagine people in general are more excited about the free agency period. I love college football. I grew up in the South, so I think that's what makes me enjoy the combine process. You know, I'm familiar with some of these people, even from some random schools that most people wouldn't necessarily be aware of. So I like that. But that being said, if you're the Giants and there's rumors out that you're getting Adrian Peterson, or at least there's a glimmer of hope, it's hard not to be your priority.
Free agency. See, I'm in a nebulous position here. I'm far more interested in free agency than the combine, but I'm more interested in the draft than anything else.
Right.
So I feel like the combine, to me, it does nothing for me. It just allows the draft prognosticators to get an idea of what's going on. So then in a month and a half here, when we're talking about, you know, Roger Goodell up announcing picks in the first round,
right,
we have an idea of what's gone on and what's led to that and why people are rising or falling. And you're going to start to hear more of the names. I mean, I'm interested in the combine names that everyone else is interested in. Christian McCaffrey, Leonard Fournette, Jabril Peppers out of Michigan. I mean, the guys that everybody knows, you know, Mahomes, the kid from Texas Tech who is rapidly supposedly rising up draft boards with how he's done at the combine. I'm really interested in those guys. On the surface, though, like for this week, free agency to me is where a good team can go over the edge. If you're a bad team, you're not going to remake your team in free agency. You're going to remake your team through the draft. But if you're a good team, if you're the Seahawks, if you're Denver looking to get back into the playoffs, if you're the Patriots looking to repeat, who are you going to keep? Who are you going to lose off that robust free agent list? Free agency, to me, far more interesting than the combine, but the draft trumps all of it.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, at the combine here, we're really looking for extremes, and that's all we're looking for, right? So Fournette has a bad day. They say a pretty bad day. I don't think it was bad enough that it's going to dramatically impact what happens with him in the draft. You know, McCaffrey just crushes it yesterday. Phenomenal in every measurable. Just has a day that people go, oh my goodness, this is incredible. So maybe it does do him some good. And then you get into this weird zone, this whole Reuben Foster story where...
Yeah, the Alabama linebacker who sent home.
To me, might be the best player in the country at any position. I mean, he's phenomenal. When you watch Bama, that's who pops off the screen. And I come from a family of diehard Alabama generation.
Roll Tide!
Right, exactly. Somewhere they just woke up screaming, Roll Tide, as I mentioned it. So they are just diehard. But anyway, he's the guy who you watch and go, oh my goodness, he's the NFL talent, right? So he has this weird thing happen at the hospital, and he's getting in. He kind of had your night. He's like there for 10 hours trying to get an MRI. He's not even participating in the combine for the most part because he has a shoulder thing, so he's recovering. Why is that guy there? You're a top 10 pick. Stay home. Like, nothing good can come of it. You're
the
only
interview
setting yourself
the interview process. That's
I guess,
why.
But if you have a good interview, they're still taking you top 10. If you have a bad interview, they're likely not going to take you top 10. If you don't have an interview, they're going to watch your tape and they're going to say, Reuben Foster's the best at any position in the country. I'm going to take him. Now he has this weird thing and he has to leave. I assume he left because you don't want to go lie about what happened.
They sent him home.
Well, then that's even worse.
He didn't leave on his own volition. So Reuben Foster's a linebacker for Alabama. Again, as you said, he was waiting for a procedure, waiting to get checked out. Something escalated, and he's yelling at the hospital's attendant, and the NFL sent him home.
Right. So not good, right? So he could have stayed home and been better off.
Bad luck,
bad experience. I just don't know that if you're a top 10 guy, I don't think you really need to be there. There's nowhere for you to move up unless you are definitively somebody who, based on who else is available, based on who's going in front of you, if you can leapfrog somebody, great. Maybe you need to go. Otherwise, I'm staying home.
It's something you said a second ago. Fournette has a bad combine. And the reason why, Fournette, the running back from LSU, and a lot of people think maybe he could be a fit early in the first round and maybe be the first back taken in what's a really deep running back class. He weighs in at 240 instead of what he played at, which is between 230 and 235. Then he ran a 4.41 40, which for a guy who's 240 pounds seems pretty darn fast to me. So that doesn't seem bad. McCaffrey ran a 4.38. There's really that big a difference between 4.38 and 4.41 that you're going to tell me Fournette had an awful day and McCaffrey had a great day when there's 3/100ths of a second separating them.
Yeah, I mean, this is what happens, right? So again, that's sort of my overwhelming point, which is if you're Fournette and you're the guy, you're the guy everyone says you're going first, you have nothing to gain except for they're going to go, oh, maybe McCaffrey's closer to you than we thought he was. Like, that's all you set yourself up for was, if I have even just a mildly subpar measurable in any one of the drills, and I think McCaffrey had a better cone drill, he had a better 40 time, I think he kind of topped him in 3 or 4 or 5 different measurables, that's a problem if you're Fournette now. Like, they never would have had those if you didn't go show up and give them a reason to doubt.
So McCaffrey is a guy that you've heard projected possibly to fall to the Patriots, and just what a Patriots pick that would be. Small back, now
total Patriots.
Now being doubted, coming off an injury, runs well, catches balls out of the backfield. Move off from the combine for a second here.
Yeah.
In the draft and in free agency, what are your top needs that if you're a Patriots fan and a Giants fan, what's on your wish list for your team this year? Because if I'm both of them, I think I'm going right to tight end. I think tight end is a major need for both teams. I think it's more so for the Giants. You want to get in need for your team, 802-655-6672. If I'm a Giant fan, I'm wishing for a tight end. O.J. Howard, Jake Butt. This is a deep tight end class as well. You're picking 23rd. You might be able to get a tight end like an O.J. Howard at that spot. You haven't had an impact tight end since Jeremy Shockey. I mean, this we're talking like 12 years ago at this
point
for the Giants. I mean, it didn't work out with Martellus Bennett when he was there early in his career.
Right.
Kevin Boss had 1 to 2 serviceable years. The guy his name keeps escaping me. He had 3 touchdowns against Washington on Thursday Night Football.
Oh, yeah.
Larry Donnell.
Donnell, yeah.
So he's
never really developed.
He's been hurt. I mean, the Giants are Odell Beckham Jr., Sterling Shepard, and nothing else. And as Eli Manning's getting older, he needs some help. If I'm a Giant fan, tight end is number one on my wish list. And if I'm a Patriot fan, I'm looking at tight end. Martellus Bennett's gone. Write him off in free agency.
It sure seems it, yeah.
I mean,
it doesn't seem like there's any chance.
He's talking about making big money in free agency. He's talking about getting a long-term deal. I mean, he's going to cost – he was a top 10 tight end. He's going to price himself out of the Patriots' price range. And Gronk, you have no idea if you can count on him. So I think tight end is a need for both those teams. What else you got?
Yeah, I mean, I think tight ends is a great answer for both of those teams. I think if I'm the Patriots, I'm looking for red zone targets. Like, I get what they're doing with their offense.
That's why I'm signing Brandon Marshall.
Thank you. That's exactly where I'm going. I know they've had their feuds in the past, and he's said things like, oh, I'd never be a Patriot, and if I did, I'm getting my ring and I'm getting out of town type stuff. Put it all – come get your ring then and get out of town. Like, they'll take that, I think, because if he's available to them, and I don't know how all of it would exactly work – but if they can work him in, I don't see how you don't make a way to work him into your scheme, even given the way they're running their offense. When you get to the red zone, they need somebody. Who would you rather have than Brandon Marshall? McCaffrey, great, but they have pass-catching backs who have been effective. He's certainly talented, and I think the big thing yesterday, too, was like his cone drill time was quicker than Odell Beckham's, right? So they're like, oh, this guy is an absolute just athlete. Great. You still just need some size and some presence in the red zone.
The Patriots, absolutely, I'm with you. Brandon Marshall is 2 years removed from rewriting Jets history books.
Right.
I mean, he had 109 catches and over 1,000 yards two years ago. And he still had 60 catches for 800 yards last year on a terribly quarterbacked team, on a team that couldn't get anything going offensively. The wide receiver position is hampered or helped by your quarterback play. And is hampered or elevated, and the Jets didn't have anything. Marshall's a guy who's exactly that red zone target that you need. If there's one thing that the Patriots missed without Gronk, it was a red zone target.
Yep.
Giants also need a running back. You mentioned Adrian Peterson. Yeah. He might not be the fit there. There's some other places that appear like could be better fits for Peterson, but they do need a back. And again, I go back to this again. Eli Manning's going to be pushing 36 years old next season.
Yeah.
As good as Eli is, he needs help now.
No doubt.
That defense has been established. When you get Janoris Jenkins and you get JPP back now in a franchise tender, and you've got Olivia Vernon, and you've got one of the best young safeties in the game in Landon Collins, you have a defense that can help your offense out. Now give your quarterback, who's on the back nine of his career, give him more playmakers and more weapons. Odell Beckham Jr., Sterling Shepard, great. Get him a tight end and get him a back. It's Sports Saturday. Brady Farkason and Jake Kent in for Jeff and Bernie here on this Saturday. 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. Look, it's Saturday. I got some leftovers for you, and I'm going to give them out right now. Caller number five, we've got a four-pack to the Burlington Home Show. It's tonight, or it's today, 10 to 8, and tomorrow, 10 to 5 at the Sheridan in Burlington. You want to go and spend this cold day inside and talk about home improvement? I got a four-pack of tickets. Caller number five, 802-655-6672. One NFL team is going back to the future. Maybe they're just going back to the past. Some other teams should follow suit, though. We'll get into that next.
The Huddle with Rich and Arnie.
Coming up Monday at 4, we are live at Patrick Genasi's
at 101.3 ESPN.
Another day of local sports talk.
Careful.
Here we go. See, you know, there's always something with you.
What do you mean?
Sports Saturday.
You always take this down this terrible, uncomfortable road.
Okay.
On 101.3 ESPN.
Jeff Paul Dunn. I don't know. What happened to the music? I see. Oh, what happens is Dave Hunter usually plays the music. And Dave Hunter's not here. Your mic's not even on.
Wow.
So Dave Hunter's not here, so the music was gone. So I see what has to happen. I got to put in new music now.
Every time, right.
Every single time. That's fine. We can do that.
You choose
here.
Your own buffer music, though.
And I love that. So the Rams are going back to a hybrid throwback jersey next year. First year back in L.A. this year. Now they're going back to the pretty much old Merlin Olsen, Deacon Jones Rams uniform. So that got us thinking. And we want you in on this, too. 802-655-6672. Which other teams in sports, not just the NFL, in sports, should be looking to go backwards in time and bring back some throwback unis? We got a pretty extensive list here.
Yeah.
What do you got, Jay? Give me a couple off the rack.
Yeah, so a couple that came to me right away. The Buccaneers definitely should go back to the creamsicles.
The Steve Spurrier.
Yes.
Hardy Nickerson.
Yes.
What was that guy called? That guy had a name. Pirate Pete or something.
Something like that.
No, hold on.
I like the image on the helmet, so they need to bring that back too. It's not just the orange creamsicle-y color. They have to include the helmet as well. And if I have to choose one of the two, give me the helmet. While I appreciate the flag with the skeleton thing, the old school, what, Pete or whatever his name was.
It's definitely not Pirate Pete, but I'm going to find out.
Yeah, I mean, I know that's sort of like from the history and from the time when they weren't exactly a great NFL franchise. They had, you know, back-to-back no-win seasons almost. But that's okay. Embrace your history. You know, you're much better now. Jameis Winston sort of turned things around, and as they keep getting better, I think going back to the creamsicle. The other one I really like, other than the Bucks, I like the Chargers powder blues we see them wear from time to time. Definitely like those. So if they want to go back to, I don't know, when they make their move, that would be a good time, I think, to go back to the powder blues. And they could certainly do in Atlanta with their recent success. I would love the Falcon red helmets.
Yes.
Or the all-black Dirty Bird ATLs, yeah.
Yes, those are all good. The Falcons red helmet is iconic to me.
Yeah,
I love that.
I do too.
If they could even wear black jerseys with the red helmet, I would be okay. Like, it doesn't need to be the red jersey that they used to have. I'm going to go with the Lions. I want them to go back to the no helmet decals that you see on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Where it's just the silver helmet shell. I like that. I like that piece of nostalgia. Now, that will never work because if you're not putting the logo on it, then you're not branding, and therefore you're not making money. That won't happen. I want to see the Houston Rockets go back to the early 90s Olajuwon years, where it's the red, the red with the yellow. Good combo there. And I know it won't happen because we're talking two different teams. How about if the Titans went back to the pale blue Oiler uniforms? But with the blue helmet, because remember the Oilers had silver helmets with the oil rig.
Yeah.
They had blue helmets with the oil rig, and they had white helmets with the oil rig. I want the powder blue with the powder blue helmet.
All right. Yeah. So that's, go the one color.
That's where I'm going there. And you know, I got thinking about this. The Rams are going backwards. We've seen a number of other teams kind of harken back to yesteryear. I mean, the Jets were one of the first teams to do it. Remember back in the 90s, the Boomer Esiason, Ken O'Brien Jets had the forest green Jet jersey with the wording that said just Jet straight across. It had the little plane. That was in the 90s. They went back to the Joe Namath-style Jet logos sometime at the end of the like when Vinny Testaverde was still playing. So sometime in the late 90s, the Jets did it first, I think. The Bills have kind of gone back.
Yep.
They've gone with the white helmet. It's not the standing Buffalo logo, but it is the white
helmet.
Which
they should go back to.
The Blue Jays in baseball have gone back to pretty much a throwback, as have the Astros. And the Brewers have brought back the royal blue with the glove on occasion.
I like the glove. Yeah, so. I mean, I like all of those. I mean, baseball to me is a great place to do it. I would love those iconic, like, Astros unis from that. You were saying that from the 70s, like those. Oh, by the way, Bucko Bruno.
Yes, is that the name?
That is the guy's name, which makes sense as a Buccaneer. We were saying Pirate, that led us astray. But yeah, Bucko Bruno, the original, like, knife wielding in the mouth, feather in the hat, Buccaneer. So I think they should definitely go back to that. You know, if we're talking NBA. I really like those Shaq Magic pinstripe blue, like, 90s unis. So, like young Shaq. Like,
now, those uniforms are essentially the same.
Do they still wear that dark blue with the pinstripes?
Oh, the dark blue. No, they've got the royal blue, and they took the pinstripes out. But the logo is
fair enough.
Is generally
they
got to
bring
same.
Back the pinstripe. Shaq looked great. I mean, it was thinning for him, certainly. But I like the pinstripe on the dark.
Pinstripes went out in the NBA because remember the Bulls had the black.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Had the black white, alternates also.
Oh man, I forgot about those Bulls black and white pinstripe. Yeah. Also Raptors, and since we're talking about Bucko Bruno, the NBA equivalent is the original Toronto Raptors dinosaur.
Yes,
he was like that purpley, like teeth wielding.
Those were ugly.
Come on, those are iconic.
Those were ugly.
I feel like if they bring those back, that would be fine. They're a little cartoonish. We were kind of having this conversation in the pre-show, but some of the logos, you know, the Dolphins used to have that sort of cartoony dolphin. The Raptors had that, you know, essentially Barney the Dinosaur, maybe a little step above in aggression, but
yeah, the about 10 years ago, the NFL teams took all their animal logos and made them a whole lot meaner.
Yes, very mean.
Because if you looked at it, the Seahawks had this wimpy, straight horizontal. The eye was like a lazy. Like it wasn't tough.
Yep.
The Cardinals, the Eagles, they were all the same way. The Lions, then they slanted them all and they gave them all like an eye that was a quizzical looking eye, and they look a lot meaner. And the Seahawks got a lot better with the mean looking logo.
Yeah, it worked out.
You know what bothers me, and I get it from a safety standpoint is that the NFL has basically taken out the ability to wear a lot of these throwback jerseys.
Yeah.
Because the NFL has a rule that every player has to wear one helmet per year. One helmet, the same helmet for every game. So any jersey that requires you to have a different helmet than what your current helmet is very, very difficult to pull off. The only way you could do it is basically if the helmets are the same color, you can switch out the decals, but you can't paint over your current helmet because it just takes too long. I asked this question to Paul Lucas. Paul Lucas is the uniform expert at ESPN. I asked him, I said, how long does it, like, why can't we see this? He said it takes multiple days for helmet paint to dry, and so therefore players would miss having that helmet shell at practice. So, like, that's why you can't see the Buccaneer creamsicle uniform, because they can't paint their current helmet white.
They use the game helmet at practice, too?
Yes, same helmet, the same helmet shell all year. So, like, I'm wearing a throwback Seahawks jersey right now, royal blue, and it had a silver accompanying helmet. Seahawks can't wear that because they can't paint their current Navy helmet that silver color. So you've taken out the ability to see a lot of those iconic uniforms. That's why you won't see the Red Falcons helmet anymore.
Yeah, that's really too bad. Do they wear the same? Is that why they wear them in the Pro Bowl too? This is sort of a side topic now, but they wear their individual helmet, team helmets in the Pro Bowl. Is that the same game helmet from the whole year?
They do that so that we know who they are.
Fair.
And they've always done that. But because this is a recent rule in the last few years, because you could wear throwback uniforms before. It is an interesting topic. That's why, like, when you saw the Color Rush games this year.
Same helmet.
Right. Remember Denver, though, wore the old John Elway decal. But they kept the Navy helmet instead
just
of the Royal
because
they couldn't paint it Royal Blue. It's Sports Saturday here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. We're about 8 minutes away from Kyle Glazer, Baseball America, who will join us. And speaking of baseball, everyone is up in arms about baseball, and they have been for years about pace of play.
Yeah.
Games too slow. Games too boring. Not enough offense. I'm here to tell you that college basketball is in a far more dire situation, I think, than baseball is.
Yeah.
I mean, I was watching Iowa and Wisconsin the other night.
Okay.
The last 3 minutes took like 26 minutes of real time.
Yeah.
Review. Let's check this flagrant. Flagrant one, flagrant two. Did the ball go off this guy or that guy? Now we're going to come and talk about it. We've got to explain it to the broadcasters, and then we've got to get back together. And then there's a timeout, and then there's missed free throws, and there's a timeout again, and now we're going to foul because it's a close game. Pace of play in basketball, I think, is just as big an issue as it is in baseball.
No, it feels like a huge problem. And admittedly, I don't watch much college basketball till this time of year. But the timeout coming off a timeout coming off a timeout is, like, infuriating. As someone who's a casual watcher of the sport, I don't understand it. It shouldn't take that long. Can't they just make a simple rule that keeps people from having three timeouts in a row?
There should be a rule. I mean, I just the infuriation about baseball to everyone is a couple different things. I mean, if you notice, every sport has gotten longer because it's a way to make more ad revenue.
Of course. Yeah.
I mean, the NFL games on Sunday used to be 1-4. Now they're 1-4:35.
If you're lucky, right?
And the 1 o'clock game often bumps up to like 4:29.
Yeah.
I mean, the game's gotten a half hour longer, but you don't care because there's so many commercials and you've got halftime and you can reset yourself. Basketball, halftime, same thing. You're able to reset yourself. Baseball, if you're going to watch it, you're making a full 3 hour, I can't get up commitment. So that 3 to 3.5 seems like a big deal. Where in football, it doesn't care. You go grab another beer, you order pizza, you're checking your fantasy team. You're able to, and it's once a week. But tennis, golf, baseball, if you're going to watch it, you're making a full-time commitment to that. And the fact that it's every day, it kind of weighs on you. But basketball games, I mean, the last 5 minutes, if the game is close, has always taken this long. Limit the number. If we're going to talk about pace of play, I don't mind having the pace of play conversation in baseball. I mind having it when everyone else thinks that only baseball is the problem. College basketball games, if you want to talk about rules, we're talking about all these ways to make baseball faster. Why not? Okay, we'll get rid of a timeout in basketball.
Yeah.
You can't call consecutive timeouts.
Right.
We're going to limit the number of replays that there can be. You can't stop and replay a ball until the next media timeout. You can go back and retroactively make a call. I don't know what it is, but baseball's not the only sport with a pace of play issue. And baseball's issue to me is less about pace of play as it is about lack of action.
Right.
I mean, the world game 7 of the World Series took almost 4 hours.
Right.
And it was 10-9.
Yeah.
And everyone said it was one of the greatest baseball games.
Not a lot of complaints.
Ever.
Not a lot of complaints.
If that's a 3-2 game that
right.
takes 4 hours, people are like, ugh, dragging on. Nothing's happening.
Right.
People love a 4-hour football game. Alabama and Clemson, national championship game, started at 8:20.
Right.
Ended at midnight.
Yep.
I mean, it's a 3.5-4 hour game. But because it came down to the wire and it ended on the last play and it was, I don't even remember what the score is, 35-34 or whatever,
right.
people loved it and people called it great. The Super Bowl always takes 4 hours. If the Super Bowl is 40-37, great game. If it's 3-0 and takes that long, nobody wants anything
right.
to do with it.
Sure.
It was terrible, a waste of time.
Right.
Pace of play, not the issue. Lack of action is the issue. Balls in play down, strikeouts up, more dead time in baseball, and I think that's the problem.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that's exactly right. And I've never understood the pace of play argument in baseball. It's far worse in specific situations in basketball, in college in particular. But the NBA is just as bad, frankly. I really struggle watching like end of quarters and even in the NBA just because at the half or at it's halfway through the game and they'll still drag out the last couple possessions for endless amounts of time. Baseball, to me, you may not understand what's going on, and we have this in the U.S. when it comes to soccer, too, when it comes to Premier League, and, you know, it's growing in popularity, but people still watch Premier League and go, God, those guys just ran around for 90 minutes and 1-0, nothing happened. Well, that's not true. You may not understand what's going on. You may not understand when the pitcher's on the mound and the pitches that he throws and the ball's not in play, but a lot went on. But that's just a lack of understanding, perhaps. Maybe we haven't been watching as long. With baseball, I've never quite understood why people can't appreciate what happens with the pitcher and what happens even when the ball's not in play. But to me, yeah, it's not pace.
It's a terrible hypocrisy, and I'm a part of it too. I am diehard throwback baseball, played it my whole life, played it in
right.
college, don't want to see the game touch for the most part. How dare you say 1-0 baseball is not good?
Right. Right.
But I'm the guy who will say in the NHL, give me 7-6. I don't
right.
want 1-0.
We'll play 3-on-3, right.
I don't want 1-0. Right. I'm that same guy that says World Cup soccer. Hey, I just invested 2 hours in this and I got nothing, overtime, and then a shootout that everyone's complaining about.
Right.
Or penalty kicks that everyone's complaining
yeah.
about. It all depends really on where your bread is buttered, and my bread is buttered with baseball, so you're protective of it.
Sure.
But if that's hockey or soccer, give me something that's going to increase the offense.
Right.
It's 101.3 ESPN. It's Sports Saturday. I'm on so many shows now. We got Champlain Valley Game Night.
We
got The Huddle. I got Sports Saturday, and I love it, but I got to keep them straight here in my head. Look, I'm still giving away. I got more tickets. More tickets for you on Saturday. We had a great response on the last giveaway, so I'm giving away more. The Burlington Home Show, a 4-pack today, tomorrow, to Sheridan and Burlington, 802-655-6672. I'll give them away to caller number 3 this time because I want you guys to dial in even quicker than you did last time. Kyle Glazer, Baseball America. We'll ask him about pace of play, preview the World Baseball Classic, and talk a little bit about the Red Sox. All that more next, Sports Saturday, 101.3 ESPN.
The Huddle with Rich and Arnie.
Coming up Monday at 5:20, it's time for Monday Mirages.
We'll break down the
T-Rex will fix that hole in your kayak. It has a waterproof backing and UV-resistant materials to hold up in extreme weather. I've got to get my hands on T-Rex.
T-Rex, ferociously strong tape.
Visit T-RexTape.com to find a retailer near you.
Sports Saturday.
I mean, so good. It's a good chili. In fact, Bernie, maybe I'll bring you a cup sometime.
I would love it.
This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN.
Sports Saturday here on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. Brady Farkas and Jake Kent in for the guys today, right out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line. And we find ourselves Kyle Glazer, Baseball America, your one-stop shop for everything baseball, up with us early on this Saturday. Kyle, how are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're cold. It is 3 degrees with a negative 30 wind chill right now.
Ouch. I do not envy you, but I admire you for being able to put up with it.
So it does not feel like baseball to us, but it feels like baseball to you guys over at Baseball America. And look, we got a whole lot of questions on the WBC and the Red Sox, but we were just talking about pace of play. And it's very ironic to me because I am old school baseball guy. I don't want to see anything change. And I think it's less about pace of play as it is lack of action at times. How do you see it? Is it pace of play or is it the fact that balls in play are down, strikeouts are up, and scoring is down?
I do think pace of play has a lot to do with it, and it's interesting. I didn't think that as much until I started covering some more minor league games for Baseball America in addition to the major league games. And once they put the pitch clock in at the AAA level, and you go to some of the AAA games now, even though the time difference is only about 10 minutes versus average time of game for a major league game, it feels very different. So a lot less dilly-dallying, a lot less dead time, a lot more is going on. And I actually do think it greatly enhances the entertainment of the product. It's funny, I'm also an old-school baseball guy in a lot of ways, but I also see the other side of it where at a certain point, you do have to do something. You know, as recently as, you know, the 70s, the average game time was 220. It was still under 3 hours a few years ago, about 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Now we're already up to, you know, 3+ with a lot of them in the 310, 315 range. So it's kind of funny. The old school baseball guys are arguing against it, but old school baseball was played much quicker. So I think there is something to be said for how can we find ways to ensure that, you know, umpires are essentially enforcing, because there already is a rule on the books about how quickly you have to deliver your pitch. Umpires just aren't great at enforcing it. I think they've made strides with cutting the commercial breaks between innings and putting a hard clock on when players have to be back out on the field. But I do think it would help if they limited mound visits as well as ensured that the pitch clock situation was enforced. It would make a difference.
Do you think it also depends a little bit? There's some irony here, depending on which sport you're beholden to. The casual baseball fan doesn't enjoy 2-1, 1-0. I love it, and I'm going to guess that you love it because we appreciate it. But I'm the same fan that says, okay, if I'm watching hockey, give me 7-6, give me 5-4, and if it's soccer, give me 3-2. It just feels like, depending on the sport that you're protective of, everyone's view is very different.
There's no question. I do think that, you know, it's funny. So my wife is actually not the biggest baseball fan in the world, and various members of my family have various levels of interest. But even a 2-1 game, if the pitcher's cruising, if he's striking out, you know, 12, 13 guys, there is a lot of excitement about it. But really, when I talk to more casual baseball fans, the number one complaint isn't necessarily lack of action, is that it takes so long. So I do think that is a fundamental problem that baseball should at least try and improve. And you can do that, I think, without, you know, quote-unquote, destroying the game.
Kyle, where do you fall on this whole debate around putting a guy on second base or putting a guy somewhere on the base path and in a particular inning?
Don't do it.
Right? So it's too far, right?
Yes. There are solutions, and then there's ridiculous things to kind of try and fix a problem that doesn't exist. You know, the problem, look, extra innings are extra innings. They're going to happen. The main, of all the things you could do to increase the pace of play and shorten game times, that's somewhere number 85,736 on the list.
All right.
I mean, it's unfortunately something that got a little traction because someone said, why not try it in rookie ball, the complex leagues? And look, we're not going to see that in Major League Baseball. We've seen various iterations of that in international baseball. And it's horrible. No one likes it. Doesn't do anyone any good. I think, again, it would be foolish to even attempt to do it anywhere beyond the complex leagues. You're not even going to see it in low A, which is something the Players Union has made very, very clear, which is the right way to go about it.
I'll put you down as indecisive.
I think he's very decisive. Kyle Glaser, Baseball America, with us here on Sports Saturday. Brady and Jake in for Jeff and Bernie. All right, Red Sox Nation with a collective sigh of relief yesterday as we hear that David Price won't need surgery. He's going to be shut down for 7 to 10 days. Your thought when you hear that, are you ready to say clean bill of health, the Sox are in free? Are you potentially bracing for this is going to linger and be an issue?
Anytime you're talking about a veteran pitcher with as many innings on his elbow as David Price does, and you start hearing elbow soreness plus second opinions plus MRIs, it's concerning. And while obviously it's good that, you know, Tommy John, what everyone was afraid of, has been avoided, that doesn't take away from the fact that lingering elbow soreness is exactly that. There's no guarantee he's going to go out there,
right,
you know, throw a couple 95-mile-an-hour fastballs and something's going to flare up. Whether that's, you know, season-ending surgery or just something that bothers him throughout the year, it's still detrimental. I apologize. That's my puppy barking at me. But, you know, so something where right now I think cautious optimism is the way to go. At the same time, the Red Sox have done a nice job building pitching depth, and frankly, you have to. We've seen the rate of injuries for pitchers, you know, whether it's Tommy John, shoulder injuries, really any sort of ailment that can knock a guy out for, you know, even 10 starts, a lot of times that is enough to make a difference in a pennant race. And the Red Sox have been smart enough and have the financial resources enough to say, look, the guys that they're going to bring up to replace David Price cannot replace David Price in his prime, but they can give you enough innings that'll support the team, give them a chance to win. And so I think the Red Sox are in good shape to absorb a long-term injury if this becomes that.
They've done a good job, I agree with you, at the major league level, picking up pieces like Steven Wright and Drew Pomeranz, and they've got Rodriguez and all that. On the minor league side, they traded pretty much everybody. They got rid of Moncada. They got rid of Kopech. They got rid of the guys, Travis Shaw, they got rid of in the Thornburg deal. Is the cupboard bare for the Red Sox at the minor league level? Because I feel like they can't afford a couple major injuries, because I just feel like there's nothing left to come up.
I mean, they kept Andrew Benintendi, which was the big one. They also, you know, they do have a couple of other guys. They picked up Josh Ockamy a few years ago as a power-hitting first baseman who's got some promise. There's no question it's a much more shallow system. But the thing with the Red Sox is they have the financial tools, if you will, to, you know, make something happen midseason if they have to. Even if they don't have it in prospects, they have enough, you know, pieces that would interest other teams potentially to pick up, you know, a piece here or there. And so many of their guys, you know, are still young. I mean, Mookie Betts, Jackie Bradley Jr., Xander Bogaerts, they're not too concerned about, you know, those guys going down with major injury. Pedroia's had a bill of health for a while now. I mean, I think it's always good to have depth, but at the end of the day, the entire point of all this is to win the World Series. And the Red Sox are the team, you know, along with the Cubs, in the best position to do that. And so while, you know, obviously prospects are great to have, you need them for reinforcements in the future, when you have a team like the Red Sox do, with a core that really is ready to win the World Series, I mean, they still kept their number one prospect. You know, there's still some guys in the system who could prove useful. I wouldn't say the cupboard's bare. I think they gave up a lot, but I understand what they did, and I think there's a very good chance it ends up being worth it.
Kyle, if we switch over to the Yankees, where are we at with some of their prospects like Clint Frazier? And tell us a little bit more about what you expect from Gary the Sanchez this year.
Well, Gary Sanchez is a fantastic player. I don't think anyone should expect him to maintain his 70 home run pace that he showed last year. But there's no question. I mean, this is a guy that's been a top 10 Yankees prospect for years and years and years, got big money as a 17-year-old. It's not like he came out of nowhere. I think everyone knew he had a chance to be really, really good, developed into that. I think you should expect him to be the Yankees catcher and a darn good one for years to come. You know, 25 home run pop is there. That arm is ridiculous. I do like what the Yankees have built. I think you will see Clint Frazier up this year. Aaron Judge will get a longer extended look this year. We're going to see even guys like Greg Bird. I mean, there's a lot of good talent the Yankees have at that AAA, you know, or have made their major league debut level, and then you've got the loads of talent below them. The Yankees are in a good spot. You know, it's interesting, obviously, having some of the quality players to trade adds up to this, but the Yankees, you know, quote-unquote rebuild, if you will, I think is going to go a lot faster than other teams that are trying to do that.
It seems it. When you look at Sanchez and what he's doing with the Yankees, and you look at Benintendi, who I think yesterday was, again, 4-for-4, home run, two doubles, obviously having a great spring. Who would you take of those two guys?
Ooh, that's tricky. I mean, I think I would take Gary Sanchez just because finding a catcher that can hit like he can while also being such a stout defender is pretty rare to find. But that doesn't mean Andrew Benintendi is not himself a special talent. I mean, look, he's got a chance to win batting titles and be, you know, the left fielder in Boston for the next 20 years and a darn good one. So I'd like to take them both. I think I might take Sanchez, but more just because of
position.
You know, how rare it is to find that production in his position. It's not anything other than positional value, if you will, as opposed to actual baseball.
Sure.
Kyle Glazer, Baseball America, with us here on Sports Saturday. Brady and Jake in for Bernie and Jeff today. Baseball America is absolutely dominating the coverage of the World Baseball Classic, which starts tomorrow, at least in America here. I mean, I think it's Israel is playing Chinese Taipei.
Monday at 4:30 a.m. Eastern time is the first game.
Monday at 4:30 a.m. Eastern time. Is that Israel and Chinese Taipei? Am I right on that?
Israel and Taiwan / Chinese Taipei, yep.
So I like the World Baseball Classic, and the main reason I wanted to watch isn't playing anymore. Shohei Ohtani, the Japanese Babe Ruth, won't play for Team Japan. What intrigues you, though, about the World Baseball Classic in general? Now that the big storyline is gone, what else can I be watching for?
You know, there's always guys who we maybe don't have a great idea about that show up and end up being really good. I mean, you look at the 2009 World Baseball Classic, guys who were on Cuba, Japan, Korea, many of whom, you know, years before they came to the States. It was Yu Darvish, Masahiro Tanaka, Yoenis Cespedes, Aroldis Chapman, Hyunjin Ryu. I mean, guy after guy after guy, Hisashi Iwakuma, you know, all these guys, even though we knew about the big guys, you know, we knew who Yu Darvish was, you know, Aroldis Chapman. Some people knew, but I think more people knew about him after the WBC. I think it really is a cool event because you're right. The main guy everyone wants to see isn't there, but there's still a lot of other guys who are interesting and other guys who will emerge. It's been kind of fun in some ways. The WBC has almost been a preview to future MLB stars, especially, you know, when you look at where guys are now and then where they are 5 years from now, or 5 years from the event, I should say, and they're, you know, being dominant superstars in the biggest markets in baseball. So I think it's still fun. I think we'll have a better idea after the WBC who the really, really good guys are, especially from Japan. But there's obviously talent there, and it's always kind of fun to see it emerge.
One of the things I've wondered is, and these players in particular I'm going to mention are all a little older, but why does Japan only have one major leaguer? For as good as they are and as much major league talent as there is, why is there no Iwakuma, Masahiro Tanaka, Ichiro, even though he's in his 40s? Why are these guys not playing for Japan as they have in the past?
Well, the kind of answer, a lot of them played for Japan already, so they're kind of giving way to a new wave. Some of it has to do with the pitchers, especially if they have injury histories. It gets a little tricky. Major league teams are less willing to let them go play for their country, and that's true of any country. I do think that, in general, you know, Japanese professional baseball is a pretty good league. And so I think for Japan, a lot of it is the way they function. They really get the team together as soon as their season ends in October, and they're playing throughout the fall, throughout the winter. And they're going to come into the World Baseball Classic in some ways having already gelled as a team, which is an advantage over a lot of other teams who, you know, the U.S. guys are reporting 2 days before the tournament starts to their team camp to kind of loosen up. So I think that's part of it, you know, wanting them all to be on the Japanese mainland, get them together earlier, let them play. And then again, you know, all those guys you mentioned, they already kind of did the WBC thing. Ichiro was already in the U.S., but all those other guys weren't in the U.S., played in the WBC, showed they could be superstars against major league talent, got the big contract. So they've already kind of done it. In some ways, there's not a huge reason for them to say, oh, I'm going to go do it again. For them, the WBC goals that they had have already been accomplished.
Kyle Glazer, Baseball America, joining us here on Sports Saturday. Kyle, hey, appreciate the time. Enjoy the WBC. Keep up the great work. And, hey, stay a lot warmer than us, all right?
I will. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. That was Kyle Glazer of Baseball America. I tell you this, the thing I'm interested in, Jake, we got about a minute here, is I'm a Mariners fan. Everyone knows that, and so I try not to bombard people with Mariners news. Felix Hernandez is working on, he needs a bounce back year, and he's really, really worked on a lot of things, and he's got some new things he's trying to work on in the spring. He's going to go play for Team Venezuela. I just wonder, is he going to go and work on those same things in the WBC, or is he going to revert back to what is comfortable for him? I just wonder, if you're a guy who needs to work on something, and you would work on it in your spring training starts, would you take that kind of thing and try to amend your game to the World Baseball Classic, or are you just going to immediately revert to what's comfortable because the game means something to you?
Yeah, I think if you're on a competitive squad, then I would imagine, yes, you go and you revert back, right? You just go be Felix Hernandez and you throw heat and you do what you do. If you're on Puerto Rico, same thing, right? Those guys aren't out there taking reps. Like, they're out there to win this thing. But yeah, if you're not on a competitive squad, you would like to think at least they go out there and treat it almost like a competitive spring training game.
All right, get the phone lines ready, 802-655-6672. When we come back, I'm going to make an argument I've been making for years, and a lot of you find it unpopular, but we're going to have the debate next. Not Champlain Valley Game Night. Sports Saturday.
The Huddle with Rich and Arnie.
Coming up Monday at 4, we are live at Patrick Gymnasium.
We'll get you ready for UVM and UNH in the America East semifinals.
Live at Patrick Gym.
Right now, I would bet he won't play again anyway.
I think I would agree with you.
Mike and Mike on ESPN Radio and ESPN2.
WCPV, Essex, Burlington, Plattsburgh.
Hey, this is Adele Murphy, captain of the Norwich women's hockey team.
This is Austin Sirok, captain of the Norwich men's hockey team.
And you're listening to Burlington and Plattsburgh's Home for Sports.
101.3 ESPN. Go Wick.
Jam-packed local weekend. Boys basketball yesterday, Division I in the quarterfinals. Missisquoi knocks off Rice. CVU over St. Johnsbury. Rutland over Mount Mansfield. Burlington beats Brattleboro. We've got UVM men's hockey 5-0 winners over Maine yesterday in the Hockey East first round. The 6-seeded Catamounts over the 11-seeded Bears, and they'll play again tonight at Gutterson Fieldhouse as UVM looks to wrap up the best-of-three series and advance to the second round. More men's college hockey. Norwich men in the NEHC Championship. They'll take on New England College today at Kreitzberg Arena. Plattsburgh men are in Oswego looking for a SUNYAC Championship against the arch-rival Lakers. Automatic qualifiers to the NCAA tournament are on the line in those matchups. Norwich women, they're at home against Manhattanville in the Conference Championship, and Plattsburgh will take on Elmira in the ECAC West. Division III men's basketball yesterday, Middlebury over Farmingdale. Matt St. Amour has 18 points. That was the first round of the Division III NCAA tournament. UVM and UAlbany in the America East quarterfinals on the women's side today. And all of it leads up until Monday at Patrick Gym when we've got UVM hosting UNH. We're going to learn about that matchup in 20 minutes with Brendan Glashine, who is a broadcaster for the University of New Hampshire. Hour number two, Sports Saturday. Brady and Jake in for Jeff and Bernie next on 101.3 ESPN.
Getting you ready for game day.
We're good, and I'm here, and I appreciate you mentioning that I look disheveled. That's nice.
Well, I mean, you know, nobody sees it but me and Dave, so that's okay.
There's a reason they put me on the radio and not TV. You understand? Yeah.
Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN.
What's up, everybody? Sports Saturday. Hour number two, Brady Farkas, Jake Ken. We're in for Jeff Paul, Bernie Siplicki today. Dave Hunter not even in here, so the whole crew out today. They just wanted to stay warm, I think.
Yep, just staying home.
I should turn your mic on, Jake.
God, I'm sorry, I'll get better.
What are you, a rookie?
It's cold out, man.
It is cold. I mean, negative 30 wind chill last night and today. I mean, this is unbelievable. And like, I'm generally okay with the cold. Like, it's truly fine to me, but this is pretty absurd. Like, you need gloves and a hat. There's my PSA for the day.
Yeah, wear gloves.
Wear gloves. Wear gloves and a hat, and thick gloves if you have them.
Yeah, probably not like latex.
Not just the thick. No, who's wearing latex gloves?
Oh, you wanted to clarify.
We got medical professionals all over the place here.
Right.
All right, get out the phones. 802-655-6672. I am going to say something that I say always, and it's... I will say this. It goes one of two ways. I'm either loved for this or hated for this. But I was just giving you the Vermont high school sports updates, and I mentioned to you that Missisquoi beat Rice. And I'm not saying that I'm happy that Rice lost, because that's not it. But I think there's a good poetic justice in the fact that Rice will not be playing for a state championship. Get the phones out, 802-655-6672. Here's the argument. Should private schools be able to win state championships against public schools? That's the question. That's the debate, and people have had it for years on both sides of the lake. Get on in, 802-655-6672. And let's be frank here. There's two different states in our listenership. New York and Vermont have very different rules, but I come back to the same reason. Private schools should not be eligible in high school sports to win state championships against public schools. The reason being, private schools, they do have the ability to recruit. I'm not saying they're going to everyone's front door and stealing players. That's not necessarily the way it works. But it's one thing for a kid to leave a public school system and go to a private school. It is another thing for that private school to take the best player, potentially, out of five different towns, assemble them on one team, and then beat all of those towns with them. You can have it one of two ways. Either don't take our talent and have a district, or take our talent all you want, but then don't turn around and beat us with it.
Yeah, I tend to agree. It doesn't make a lot of sense to let somebody assemble a team in its entirety or close to it with the best talent, and especially when you're talking about at least in Vermont, in a small state with a limited talent pool to begin with, to then take all of those kids and actively try and put them on the same team doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It gets a little more gray. I don't know if those kids have different financial obligations. I don't know where any of that stuff comes down in the world of private school and how tuition works. And so I would be even more opposed to it if there's any type of, you know, special treatment to get those players to come to the school, if there are allowances made for them that other people may or may not be privy to. That would be, to me, even worse. But yeah, fundamentally, I again think that having those kids come into a school like Rice or another private institution and dominate the public school system, which I mean, it's pretty documented. You were giving me the numbers before the show that
Rice has won 19 state championships across all sports in the last 4 years.
It's amazing.
19 right. state championships in the last 4 years. It doesn't mean they win at everything.
Sure.
But they win a lot. And there are public schools that win a lot, too.
Sure.
But I'm against private schools taking your talent. If you want to go to private school, there's all kinds of reasons people go to private school.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Religious reasons, educational reasons. Your mom and dad went there. It's a family lineage. I'm okay. Like, I'm not against private school.
Of course not, yeah.
But don't win state championship games against public school. So let's start with New York first.
Yeah.
New York, it is actually called the New York State Public High School Athletic Association Championships. Yet private schools can win them. How is that right? So not only, and this was not the case for me, but I played at Shenandoah High School in Albany, and maybe our Plattsburgh listeners know it. And I played against a school, Shaker High School. And Shaker High School had a kid who was 6'10" and got a scholarship to Georgia Tech. They had a kid who was 6'4" and played quarterback for the college or for the high school, and then went on to play college basketball at SUNY Potsdam.
Right.
And they had a kid who was a Division I lacrosse player. That was those three players at that public high school. Three players on the rival private high school, one of them drafted in the major league draft, one of them a Division II player, and one of them a walk-on at Boston College. Those three kids at the private school should have played at that public school.
Right.
That public school should have had the ability to have those six players together and win a state championship.
Right.
But when you took those three out, at the very least, don't make them play against each other in the playoffs and beat up on each other and have the private school win. That is not right to me. Leave the school district if you want. Go get a better educational or athletic opportunity. Follow your family lineage, whatever it is. That's a personal decision.
Of course.
But when it comes to athletics, don't go and beat the public school that you left. I have always felt that way. New York State Public High School Athletic Association should not be won by private schools. There are enough private schools in New York,
you would think,
that you could have a private school championship. And I know you'd get some disparity. You'd have a private high school where there's 12 kids graduating.
Sure, of course.
And you'd have a private school where there's 200 kids graduating. I get there's a disparity, but there has to be there is a difference there. In Vermont, the argument is, well, Brady, there's just not enough private schools to make your own league. I get that too. You have a couple of private schools. You have a couple of half public, half boarding schools like your Burn Burton and your St. Johnsbury. I don't care if you play a New England private league at that rate. You could play these teams in the regular season. Let Rice and CVU play. Let Rice and Burlington play. But take them out when it comes playoff time.
Yeah, I think you could make an argument that for the kids who attend the private institutions, it would actually be beneficial to them as well. So I was doing some looking into this before the show because it's not a world I'm terribly familiar with. And I came across Vermont Academy and some of their stories and some of the Rice kids who have transferred to Vermont Academy. And it's really Rice's best players, right? So the same thing sort of happening to Rice. Rice is a good school, and it's a private school here. They dominate. But the kids who are really good even leave Rice and go to a different private school that's in a private prep league only competitive league. So there's even an argument to be made that says not only would it benefit the public school system, it actually would benefit Rice, maybe not initially, but to find themselves in a more competitive league with more exposure, with better players, so they don't lose their top talent to those other prep school leagues.
19 state championships for Rice, and Rice is the example I use here in Vermont. And it's not, again, I would say the same thing about any private school anywhere. You should not be able to take players from public schools and then beat them with them. Go wherever you want to go, but let's play on an equal playing field here.
Right.
And no one's calling to tell me that I'm wrong, so I guess everyone just agrees with me. 802-655-6672 if you want to get in on that debate. It is Sports Saturday. Brady and Jake in for Jeff and Bernie. Jake, you're on Twitter a lot. You're on. I would say you're maybe more into Twitter than anyone I know.
Okay, all right.
Because I was scrolling through, you actually broke the news of the David Price injury to me.
There you go.
So
I'm on top of it.
you tweeted me about it, and I was like, David Price injured? What?
That's
you
hilarious.
Are all over Twitter. But yet you missed the fun Twitter phenomenon from yesterday.
I did. Yeah, I wasn't on at all yesterday. Yeah.
So there was a fun thing going around yesterday, and it said, name the best baseball player in history with your initials. So in my case, BF, in your case, JK. That was actually pretty tough for me to think of somebody with BF. I was like, okay.
I couldn't think of yours. Yeah.
Fernandez, Franklin, Felix Fermin. I was like, number one, who? George Fabregas. I was like, who starts with F?
Yep.
And then who's got B? And I tried my hardest not to cheat. I actually went to Baseball Reference and I looked at players in history with the last name starting with F. And I started to go down. I started to go down and I was like, I got it. So I tried to cheat, but I didn't ultimately need to cheat. Bob Feller.
Of course. Yeah.
Brady Farkas, Bob Feller.
There
that,
is.
I think, is the best player ever with my initials. What did you come up with?
Yeah, so mine was substantially easier. When you sent this to me, I immediately, of course, Jeff Kent. It's easy. We share a name. So not only do we share initials, we share a name. NL MVP 2000 San Francisco Giants.
Probable Hall of Famer eventually.
You would think. Yeah, I think he eventually found his way to the Astros after the Giants and – and
was with the Mets for a while.
Yeah, but, you know, NL MVP 2000. So, yeah, Jeff Kent was the easy answer for me.
Do you have anybody else? Any honorable mentions?
You know, I wanted to think through some more, and I kind of gave it a little bit of thought and never came up with he's got to be the best. I'm sure there are others, but that one was just too easy since we happen to share a last name. And half the time when I'm on the show in the fall for football, Dave or Jeff calls me Jeff Kent anyway, so – It just worked.
I could have gone with Bill Fagan, 1887-88.
yeah, I was trying to think of yours. My granddad was a diehard Tigers fan, and sometime as a kid, I think there was like a Bob, like Fleck or Feck.
Bob Fallon, 1984-85. I don't know anything about him.
I don't know. So I think that's the only one I came up with for you. He loved that guy for some reason. He was a catcher, first baseman, and I think he actually pitched a little bit.
Buck Farmer, currently, 2014-16. Maybe I'll give...
he could be it still.
Maybe it's I'll give too, Buck it, Farmer
it's not too late.
A little bit of love there. Bill Farrell, 1882-83.
There you go. One solid year.
Give a little bit of preference
many,
there.
How many BF guys could there be with multi-year careers even? Like, there can't be probably too many, but...
Bob Ferguson, 1944.
There you go.
Yeah,
the
you
old
know,
school.
The list is not very high right now.
A little bleak for the F. BF
Bruce
initials.
Fields. Good thing it's not C. I would not go with Sean Figgins. I can't go with Sean Figgins. Brandon Finnegan. He's in the league now.
Oh, sure.
Plays for the Reds now. So that was a fun thing going on Twitter yesterday.
Yeah, I like that.
I can't believe you missed it. Again, it is Sports Saturday. We're about 8 minutes away. Brendan Glasheen, he's an ESPN3 broadcaster, has done a lot of University of New Hampshire basketball games this year. We'll preview UVM and New Hampshire. Remember, we'll be on Monday. We'll be broadcasting live at Patrick Gymnasium. Rich and Arnie with the Huddle 4-6. Champlain Valley Game Night with me, 6 to 6:30, and then we'll get Sam Hyman on the broadcast call, 6:30. It starts UVM, UNH, and the America East semifinals, one win away from possibly playing for an America East championship. NFL Combine. Again, it's going on.
Yeah.
And NFL free agency starts next week. There's a lot of – this is a great draft/free agent class for running backs.
Yeah,
I mean, when you talk about in the draft, Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey, and Dalvin Cook out of Florida State, and even some lesser guys, Jamal Williams out of BYU,
Dixon.
Joe Mixon also out of Oklahoma. Obviously, he's got some troubled past stuff there, but arguably he's like the fourth best back on the board.
Yeah.
Aaron Lewis out of UTEP. I mean, there's guys kind of everywhere here. Free agent-wise, you're going to have Eddie Lacy, Latavius Murray, Adrian Peterson, Jamal Charles, LeGarrette Blount, and maybe Doug Martin all available. Yeah. So I ask you this. Giants or Patriots, should either one of them sign a high-profile running back this offseason? Is it a need?
I think it's a need. I think both should. I suppose if the Patriots go McCaffrey, you make an argument they don't need to. Stylistically, I think they need somebody still. The Giants' running game has just been a disaster. Like,
is that a product of a running back or not poor offensive line play?
Well, I mean, it's probably both in their case. It's just been ugly for so long, and we keep waiting for them to have guys who they keep trying to stick with Jennings, and Rashad has been okay at times.
Well, he's released now, so.
So gone, right? So we kept waiting on him, never really happened. And the young guy shows up last year, showed some good, I forget his
Darkwa.
Name.
Darkwa.
Darkwan, yeah.
No, Darkwa. Orleans Darkwa.
Orleans Darkwa, which is a great, fantastic name, by the way.
Then they've got Shane Vereen coming back from injury.
Yeah, right. Former Patriot, pass catching back, getting, I don't know, probably a little bit older at this point. Not exactly going to. I don't think you're going to run your game plan.
No, he's a
screen
pass guy.
Yeah, so I think that they – I can't imagine they don't bring somebody in.
I think if you're the Patriots, I think they bring back Blunt. I think
– probably.
The Patriots have a very weird offseason ahead. They have the sixth most cap space in the NFL.
Yeah.
But yet they haven't given that money to Dante Hightower yet. They haven't given that money to Logan Ryan. They haven't given that money to Malcolm Butler. Where is that money going to go? They don't appear willing to overpay for Martellus Bennett. Are they going to? I don't think they're going to overpay for an aging running back either. I think they bring back LeGarrette Blount on a one-year, $2 million deal or whatever.
Again.
Maybe they look to draft McCaffrey, but then you'd have, you're right, three stylistically pass-catching scat backs and one bruiser in Blount who's at 30 right now. I don't think that makes a lot of sense. The Giants, I think, they do need a running back. And I said it in hour one, and I fully believe it here in hour two. The defense is finally figured out. Jenkins, Coach, you know, Spagnuolo back on the defense, Janoris Jenkins, Landon Collins, Jason Pierre-Paul, Olivia Vernon. You have the defense in place. That no longer is the issue. Went from last ranked 2 years ago to a top 10 defense this year. Eli Manning needs help. Odell Beckham Jr., Sterling Shepard, and what else? They released Victor Cruz. You could use a slot receiver.
Yeah.
You could use a tight end, which you haven't really gotten production out of in the last 15 years almost since Shockey left. And then you could use a running back. I mean, he needs some help. They have to figure out the offensive line in terms of the run schemes, and they have to get a back that can be a workhorse. I don't know if that's Peterson. Maybe it's Latavius Murray, but it's going to cost you money. And the Giants right now, they have $32 million in cap space. Not a lot. 17 of that right now is going to the franchise tag on Jason Pierre-Paul. So unless you rework his deal and get him a long-term deal, you're looking currently at $15 million to use. You can't go and spend on a big running back. They need one. They can't spend it.
Yeah, that's a bad situation to be in. I imagine they rework that JPP deal and try and free up a little more money. But even still, I don't know which of these guys is signing for that amount of money. And even if they did, which of these guys do you feel like behind a not great run-blocking offensive line – which of these guys do you think is most productive? I mean, is it Latavius Murray? I mean, that Oakland offensive line's pretty good.
Behind a not great offensive line, I'll go with, if they're healthy, if you say everyone's healthy,
yeah.
Jamal Charles, because of his missability.
Sure.
I mean, obviously now he's pushing 30.
And stylistically.
And has had multiple ACL injuries.
Yeah.
I mean, so you can never say that he's going to be the same player that he was. But if you could guarantee he was 100% healthy, I think he could do some things. Eddie Lacy, if he could stay in shape, I think could be a guy who could run you over and kind of compensate for a poor offensive line. But bottom line, these guys need help. The Giants need help, and maybe they're going to attack it through the draft. There are a lot of running backs available. It is Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. We got another four-pack of tickets to the Burlington Home Show. Look, the response has been great. I got two more sets of four. We're going to give away one now to caller number three again. Burlington Home Show. You want to go. Stay warm. Stay inside. Think about summertime. Think about better times ahead in terms of the weather, what you can do to your house. Burlington Home Show, Sheridan in Burlington. We've got a four-pack of tickets, 802-655-6672. UVM, all the rage in town. They're taking on UNH on Monday. We've got Brendan Glasheen. He's an ESPN3 broadcaster for the Wildcats, and he joins us next on 101.3 ESPN.
The Huddle with Rich and Arnie.
Coming up Monday at 5:20, it's time for Monday Mirages.
We'll break down the weekend and tell you if they...
101.3 ESPN.
It's 3 degrees at 101.3 ESPN.
This show is just off the deep end.
Sports Saturday.
Honestly, it's like drive it off a cliff.
On 101.3.
Honestly.
ESPN.
What's up, everybody? Sports Saturday. Brady Farkas, Jake Kent. We're in for Jeff Paul today and Bernie Siplicki on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. We go up until noon. We got a full day of programming, though, on the station. Coming up at 1:30, college basketball. Big matchup, Notre Dame and Louisville. And then Bruins hockey tonight, 6:30. They're taking on the Devils at home. The big matchup in town, locally, though, it is Monday. It is UVM men's basketball. They're taking on the rivals, the twin state rivals from UNH, Monday night, Patrick Gymnasium, America East semifinals. We go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line, and we find ourselves Brendan Glasheen. He is a broadcaster for ESPN3, and has called a number of UNH games this year. Brendan, thanks for being with us. How you doing?
Hey, Brady, thanks so much for having me. And, yeah, it should be a lot of fun on Monday night. Definitely.
You're going to be in town. Also, we'll be there. We're doing the show live from Patrick Gym. It should be a sellout. It should be a great environment. UVM beat New Hampshire by 12 and by 8 this season. How do the Wildcats stack up here as they look to pull the upset here in the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, it's been the success for Vermont this year has certainly been fun to watch from a league perspective, and certainly running the table in the league, something that's never been done before, is on everybody's radar. But one thing the Wildcats have going for them is no one's really had an answer for Tanner Leisner inside, and UMBC certainly had trouble stopping him in consecutive matchups this last past Saturday, the regular season finale, and then, of course, Wednesday's quarterfinal at Durham. Leisner has to have a big game, I think, and if Vermont can put pressure on him and double him, he'll certainly have to be prepared for that, and speaks to how much depth Vermont has. But if Leisner can have something of a big game, and remember the game you just referenced, at the 12-point win in Durham, Tanner was in some foul trouble. Iba Kamara, the big man inside from Senegal, he's been in foul trouble as well. So they stayed out of foul trouble in the win over UMBC, so that's key. And if Leisner can have a big game and not get too disrupted by any sort of double team by the Catamounts, I think UNH has a chance. Now remember, Daniel Dion hit 7 threes in the game in Burlington, and you could argue that UNH played its best game of the year in a loss. And that was a game on ESPNU. That was the American East Showcase game they had this year. So, and look, one other thing too, and Coach Herrion, Bill Herrion of the Wildcats, has said this all year. He believes that his team is a way better road team. I mean, they've got 9 road wins this year. It's amongst the best in college basketball. They had a big win against Temple in the non-conference. So he likes his team's confidence when they go on the road away from Lundholm, because, as you guys can imagine, anytime you're the road team, classes, you know, campus distractions, that stuff goes all out the window. It is strictly basketball. And that's at any level when you go on the road. So, I expect UNH to put up a good fight. They'll fight the good fight. I really think the key is Leisner on Monday night.
Brendan, I've got this formula for an upset, and it's really nothing spectacular. If you're gonna pull an upset over a team that's better than you, you have to do the handful of things right. You have to A, stay out of foul trouble, B, not turn the ball over, C, get to the free throw line and convert at the free throw line. You got to shoot well from the outside, and then 5, kind of the wild card is, you've got to have somebody do something out of character. So I'll kind of go bit by bit at that. How does UNH stack up at the free throw line and from beyond the arc? Can they do those two things well if they're going to pull an upset?
Yeah, that's a good point, because the three-point shooting kept them in the game in Burlington a couple of weeks ago. Dion hitting 7 threes. He averages about 3 three-pointers made a game. I think that led the conference, at least top to bottom, from the start of the regular season. He makes about 3 a game, but he takes about 8 or 9 a game. So if Dion can stroke it from 3, they need that. It's not like they're going to be in good shape. They need that to happen. He needs to make shots. And then at the free throw line, the other thing you mentioned, Leisner's been great at the line this year. I think he ranked 4th in the league in free throw shooting, right around 84-85% for the season. Which is, of course, that's nice to have a big man that can make it from the free throw line. He'll get there about, 8 to 10 times a game. And for your wild card, it's someone to step up. I mean, it couldn't have come at a better time for UNH, because Bill Herrion's had no choice but to go to his bench lately, because they've been so thin. They play about 6 guys. The starting lineup of Kamara, Leisner, Dion, Jalen Smith at the point, and then Jordan Reed, who you lose in the shuffle, because Jordan hasn't had a great year. He's a transfer from Rice, but he set a new career high in consecutive games. He scored 18 points in the UMBC regular season game. That was what helped the Wildcats get the home game this past Wednesday. I really think Jordan Reed is an X factor here, because if he can make some threes and help Daniel Dion stroke it from the outside, like you said, to your point about the formula and the way to beat such a great team and the heavy favorite in Vermont, you do need some things that you did not see in the regular season come to fruition. So free throw shooting wise, Leisner's been good. Jalen Smith is one of the top 10 free throw shooters in the league. He's been the do-it-all guy for them. He went for 27-7 in the quarterfinal win on Wednesday night. And then in terms of a wild card, something you wouldn't expect that would happen would be a big game from there. A guy outside of their quote-unquote big four would be Jordan Reed, I think.
Brendan, you watched a lot of games this year, saw a lot of opponents for UNH. Did UVM, I know what the record says, and maybe it's an easy answer for you to give, or maybe it's a little more in-depth, did they just look different than other teams in the America East this year?
Oh, without a doubt, and it's because they've got two, or, and you guys know this better than I do, they've got two or three guys off the bench that could start, without a doubt, on any other team in the league. I mean, you could take Kayan or even some other guy. Stidle's a starter, but he's another one where you just look at the amount of pieces. And you don't even have to mention Anthony Lamb or Trey Bell Haynes. I mean, those guys are given. They're great players. But you take some of the role players from UVM. Those guys are 25 to 30 minute players starting for other teams in the league. And as far as the game in Durham in January when they met on Martin Luther King Day, I believe it was a two games in 3 days stretch for the Wildcats at home. It was about a 4, 5, 6 point game for much of the second half, and then Trey Bell Haynes, I think it had about. He had three or four and ones towards the end of the second half to put the game away. So certainly you have a lot of confidence from the point guard in Trey Bell Haynes. And then Anthony Lamb, I mean, you could argue he's just scratching the surface right now. He might be the best player in the conference because he's so young. And, I mean, I'll be talking with people from the conference, just other broadcasters and other media relations people from around the league. Anthony Lamb, he almost made the American East first team, but it almost felt like, well, Vermont ran the table with the accolades when it comes to Coach of the Year, Sixth Man of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year. We gotta mix it up a little bit here and give some other teams and other players some respect. Anthony Lamb was just scratching the surface, I think, at the time when they were in. When they were in Durham, and then of course in the game in Burlington, everybody contributed for Vermont. So yeah, I mean, look, it's evident they are, and even speaking with Coach Arian throughout the year, I mean, they are on a different level than any other team in the league.
Yeah, you kind of touched on my next question about, and it was about Anthony Lamb, who is a guy who I really do think could be the best player in the conference. Maybe in the very near future. Last two games against UNH, 13 and 16 minutes. The first go-around and 26 points and 31 minutes on that same pace the next go-around. What's the plan for him?
Well, for Anthony Lamb, it's tough because at least from the Wildcats' perspective, because when you look at, and again, like I mentioned, they're very thin. So in the starting five, you've got three guards and then two guys at the front line with Leisner and Kabara. UNH really doesn't have that stopper, and I'll use an NBA analogy. Everyone wonders, how do you stop LeBron James, or how do you slow LeBron James down? You take a Kawhi Leonard, for example, from the San Antonio Spurs, that could slow down a guy like LeBron. In a way, and I know it's a stretch, but Anthony Lamb is sort of that 3-4 man that is tough because he can shoot it from the mid-range, he can go to the basket. The Wildcats certainly can't stop him or contain him on their with a 1v1. They'll have to double or at least have some extra help in the paint because he's got that ability to get to the basket as well. So I think the plan, and again, it's another. It's tough because they got to stay out of foul trouble because they aren't as deep as a team like UVM. So in terms of stopping him, you might have to use a combination of Daniel Dion and Leisner. Leisner will have to cheat out of the paint to come up and guard a guy like Lamb, and I'm sure Lamb will be a point of focus. But then your other issue is when you try to stop Lamb, that opens up options such as a Trey Bell Haynes and the other members of the supporting cast and that starting lineup. So I guess it's very cliche, but you can't stop Anthony Lamb, but you can certainly contain him.
Hope to contain him, yeah.
and make him slow his game down a tad.
Brendan Glashine, he's a broadcaster for ESPN3. He's been a number of UNH calls, and he's here with us on Sports Saturday here on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com, and the 101.3 ESPN app. Brady and Jake in for Jeff and Bernie today. Brendan, does the extra time to prepare help UNH? I mean, you mentioned when they played him in Durham the first time, it was 2 games in 3 days. Not a whole lot of time to go over film and develop a game plan here. I mean, this is going to be a 5-day break here. Does that help UNH at all?
Yeah. I certainly think so, because even the game that was in Burlington, I'm pretty sure the rest of the league had a Monday game. I think UNH played Albany on Monday the 6th. I might have my dates mixed up, but certainly this will be the most time in terms of days and hours to prepare for Vermont this season, and Bill Herrien will be the first one to tell you they have not had success playing up in Burlington at Patrick Gym. I think the time certainly helps, and time obviously helps with minutes and keeping the body, slowing the bodies down. I will share one thing. You know, Coach Herrien, and even some of the guys I've worked with on the broadcast, they've said this was a normal year for Bill Herrien. Normally, he'd have his guys in the gym for 2 to 3 hours, you know, practicing before a game. But with this team being so thin, and maybe one body drops, they are in deep trouble. So Bill has really played the conservative route in terms of slowing things down at practice. He knows he needs to keep Jalen Smith, Tanner Leisner. He's got to keep those guys in check, conditioning-wise, because he can't run them out of the gym in practice because they'll run out of time. But certainly having these days off, it even goes back to the UMBC game. When they played UMBC on Saturday, last Saturday, for the regular season finale to get the home game, there wasn't really much to do at that point because all the cards were pretty much out on the table. And the two teams met again 4 days later on Wednesday. So game planning wise, nothing really changed. I mean, they had to make some adjustments and slow down Jarris Lyles, who was a headache for them in the regular season finale. But certainly having 5 days or so to get ready for this Vermont team, I'm pretty sure, I don't know this for sure, but I'm pretty sure Bill Herrien and company, at least for the rest of the staff, they are thrilled. They have some extra time to prepare and rest the legs for what will no question be their toughest game of the year.
Brendan Glashine, ESPN3 broadcaster. Hey, we appreciate the time. I know you're making the trip up here to Burlington on Monday. We're doing our shows live there. We'll meet up then, and we'll catch up. We appreciate the time.
Yeah, no problem. I'll say this, too. I've never been to Patrick Gym. I heard it's an excellent atmosphere, especially for a tournament. I know they've done great this year, putting the fans in the seats for what's been a historic season. And I'll say this. I mean, to me, it doesn't matter what happens on Monday night. I think it's going to be a great game, and I think you got a great story either way. If Vermont continues to win, they remain a great story in the league. And if UNH can pull off the upset, you have a team that knocks off a perfect season. You really have a great storyline either way. Looking forward to it.
Brendan, we'll see you Monday.
Okay, sounds good, guys. Thank you.
That was Brendan Glashine, broadcaster for ESPN3. No, it would not be a great story if UNH won. No, it would not be a great story.
I get where he's coming from, but yeah, not a lot of folks nodding their heads yet.
I mean,
on
maybe on the other side of this, you know, maybe on the Durham side, it might be a great story. Jake, did you see this? You know, look, we have you on a lot on Sports Saturday during football season. You're kind of known as the fantasy guru.
Yeah.
Did you see that fantasy football derailed the season of the Richmond baseball team?
I did see this.
5 Richmond baseball players suspended for partaking in fantasy football. Your thoughts?
The NCAA at it again. I think that there are a long, long list of problems that people have with the way that the NCAA manages aspects of their student athletes. This is just one more on the list.
See, I'm actually not mad about this.
Okay.
You can argue that it's a dumb rule, but it is a rule.
Fair.
You are not allowed to play fantasy sports for money. You can play as many fantasy leagues as you want for free. You can do as many daily bracket challenges with your buddy if you want, if there's nothing being exchanged or there's no monetary prize. I played fantasy football, baseball, and did March Madness brackets my entire time playing college. I knew very well it was a violation.
Right.
Were they going to catch me at Oswego State? Probably not. But I did it.
Right.
You sit in a compliance meeting at the beginning of every season. You sign paperwork that's very, very long and very, very detailed about all the things you can and cannot do and just everything. And explicitly in there, you cannot play fantasy sports for money. You cannot bet on anything in which the NCAA has a championship in. That's the rule.
Which I understand. And
If you want to bet on NASCAR and you want to bet on horse racing, you're completely entitled
okay
to do that
right.
Because the NCAA does not issue championships in those sports.
Yeah.
So again, you can argue about the validity of the rule, but it is a rule. So I feel for them because I did it, but I don't feel for them because you signed paperwork that says I won't do this.
Yeah, let me be clear. I don't have a problem necessarily with them getting punished because, again, you're right. I am 100%, whatever the topic is, I am on board. If it's a rule, don't break it. It's that simple. You take the risk, that's fine if you want to do that, but just understand the consequences. That being said, it's a bit of a ridiculous rule, yet again, in the NCAA. For one, you know, when the players should have known when they got together with lawmakers last year and made these major fantasy sites like DraftKings and FanDuel pool college sports from their availability, they should have been a red flag that says, hey, they're kind of on this as a hot topic. We may want to not get involved. So that's sort of one thing. The second thing is, if you live in a state or play in a state or residing in a state or visiting a state in which fantasy sports are not deemed as gambling, and we can have that conversation another day because it's a game of skill, and it's not. While it has elements of luck, there are many who would say it's not gambling, and it's not just horse racing. If you live in a state and are residing, playing in a state where it is not deemed gambling, and it has in fact been recently legislated as legal, it's a little bit crazy for the NCAA to then say, "Oh, it's gambling." Well, the state says it's not gambling, and on paper they say it's not gambling. How is it gambling?
The only thing I say, you say, "Oh, the NCAA added again," and I can see that. But aren't you – so this was college Division I athletes betting on pro football, you know, betting pro football.
Right.
Aren't you one step removed then? Aren't you one step away from Division I athlete betting on Division I athletics? You know, if these guys did a March Madness bracket.
Yeah.
And it comes championship time, and one of these guys has a buddy at Kansas and a buddy at North Carolina, and he says, hey – I got you guys in the over today. You know, take that extra shot at the buzzer. Or, hey, I got you guys. You know, the spread here is 7. You know, lose by 5. Like, whatever. Aren't you one step away from collusion in college sports happening?
Well, to think that there's never been collusion in college sports or not in pro sports today, I think, is probably misguided.
But if you're going to allow the college players to bet, aren't you one step away from risking the integrity of all of college athletics? It's already in a fragile state because you have the risk of point shaving.
Yeah. I'm not sure there is any integrity in college athletics, but aside from that, the point here is you keep saying betting. The state defines what they are doing as not betting. The federal government, wherever it's been deemed in that state as not betting, it's not betting. They're not placing bets on an over and under. They're playing a game with an enormous number of variables. It's not a singular outcome they're betting on. They can't just give up a home run in a particular inning to skew the score and come out with some money. One, there's not even – you can't even play this game as it relates to college sports any longer. So it's only pro sports. And pro athletes I can't even imagine how many play fantasy sports every Sunday, play themselves, for instance.
Yes.
It happens all the time.
I want to know, and I don't – this makes a difference to me, and I don't know if it should. I want to know how much money they were playing for. I mean, if this was a $10 entry fee at the beginning of the year – does that warrant 5 games where the prize is, what, $100 maybe?
Right.
If this is a $500 entry fee, which I can't imagine college kids are playing.
They're students, man. They're not.
Then I feel differently the other way. But bottom line is this, it is a rule,
and
don't break it. There are times where rules can be broken and rules are meant to be broken, and there are different things at different play for different situations. This is not one of those
times. It's not worth it, period.
It's not worth it. Like I said, I did it. And I knew that it was wrong, and if I had gotten suspended, I would have said it was a dumb rule.
Yeah.
But
it was a rule.
It was a rule, and I broke it. I signed paperwork saying I wouldn't do it. It's Sports Saturday here on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. Brady and Jake in for Jeff and Bernie. When we come back, what are we talking about, Jake? We got a whole lot of things to cover still. Noah Syndergaard rips the World Baseball Classic. Should he be doing that? All that and more next.
Come on, Thor.
Final segment, Sports Saturday.
The Huddle with Rich and Arnie.
Coming up Monday.
Another day of local sports talk.
I went to buy beer and I got carded.
What?
I got carded.
Had to be a new employee.
No.
Okay, knock it off. Let's not go there.
Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN.
Coming down to the wire here on Sports Saturday, 101.3 ESPN. Brady and Jake in for Jeff and Bernie. Dave Hunter out. So we got Action Jackson on the phones, and you want to get in, 802-655-6672. World Baseball Classic starts tomorrow, 4:30. It actually starts on Monday, 4:30 a.m. The game will be played. It's in, I want to say it's in South Korea. It's in one of the Asian pools. It might be in South Korea. It might be in Tokyo. But it's played between Israel and Taiwan / Chinese Taipei. So Team USA doesn't have a lot of its best players playing, right?
Right.
The roster for the Dominican Republic has a greater ratio of stars than the Team USA roster
Puerto
does.
Puerto Rico, yeah.
So they asked Noah Syndergaard, ace for the Mets, if he regrets not playing. And he said, quote, "Nobody gets to the Hall of Fame or wins a World Series by playing in the World Baseball Classic." Bad attitude by Thor?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems like a bad attitude. I mean, first of all, like we just heard earlier in the interview, 2009 was loaded with major league prospects who nobody knew who they were and now are household names. Furthermore, it's kind of it's just sort of a silly thing to say that nobody won a World Series because of it. I mean, Javier Baez won a World Series last year, and he played for Puerto Rico in 2013. So maybe he could find a way to directly tie it into his participation. But yes, it sounds like a bad attitude.
It's just one of those things optically that doesn't look good.
Yeah.
I mean, because anytime, like, we all get what the negative rub of the World Baseball Classic is, right? It's close to the season, pitchers aren't ready, all that. I mean, Noah Syndergaard's a guy who's making, for as good as he is, he's making $600,000 this year. I mean, he can't afford to tear his UCL because he's going out and throwing 65 pitches in the World Baseball Classic, so he should have amended it. No one won a World Series, got to the Hall of Fame, or got a big contract
right.
based off the World Baseball Classic, although that is the case for some of the foreign players.
Sure,
it's not necessarily the case for the U.S. players. It's bad optically. Anytime you're talking about not representing your country, it can't be basically, this is not important. If you don't want to play, fine. There's 100 other stars that aren't playing for various countries, and a lot of them are for the U.S., but you got to come up with a better reason than that. Just say simply, you know what, it was an honor to be asked.
Right.
I've decided that my priorities this offseason lie with the Mets. I want to work on some things.
Right.
I want to go through the full spring, and I want to work on building team chemistry with my teammates. I thank Team USA for the opportunity to play. I wish them the best of luck. Just leave it at that.
Right. That's all it has to be. I mean, he's on a team. It's so easy, too. They've had so many concerns about injury with that pitching staff. It'd be so easy just to say, I need to be careful here. That's important to me. I'm going to pass this time. Leave it at that. You don't need to come out and say, I hate the Olympics or I hate the World Baseball Classic.
But you know what the irony is here? And I've thought this for a while, and I just played into it, and I'm mad at myself now. We want athletes to be honest. Like, we chastise athletes who are robots and give the cliche answers. And here I am telling Noah Syndergaard to have a cliche answer. We want athletes to be honest. But when their honesty makes us uncomfortable, then we're offended by it. You can't have it both ways. Don't get, you know, it goes back to the Richard Sherman thing years ago after the game with Aaron Andrews and Michael Crabtree. People hated him for that. You know what? You want honesty because the alternative is Russell Wilson. Separation is in the preparation. We're going one game at a time and on to the next. Like, your alternative is Bill Belichick.
Middle ground.
Your alternative is Russell Wilson. You can have robot man or you can have honest man.
No.
Which one would you rather have?
I want middle ground, man. Like, we gotta find a way for athletes to represent their teams properly and I think to be respectful of things that are going on, but also not be Bill Belichick. And just do nothing, because obviously they're welcome to do that if they want to, but from a fan's perspective, we don't like it. But no, there's got to be some middle ground. You got to find somewhere in between.
I mean, I don't think that was the right way to handle it for Syndergaard, but again, don't tell athletes you want them to be honest.
Right.
And then when their honesty makes you uncomfortable, turn around and act offended, because you're going to get the cookie cutter answer if they're so worried about having to be PC. So I'll take that back. I don't like what Syndergaard said. But I'm happy he was honest. I don't agree with it. I would have handled it differently, but at least he was honest. At Sports Saturday, another guy who, he's being honest, I thought, and now I've lost some respect for, is Colin Kaepernick. And let's get this straight. Colin Kaepernick has said he will stand next year for the national anthem, and that looks great in a lot of ways, right? because he offended so many people by kneeling and by sitting down at the early part of the year. I didn't like what Colin Kaepernick did. I respect his issue. I'm not an African-American man. I'm not a minority man. I don't know what people who are minorities go through, so I'm not here to disparage and say he's wrong or that he's misguided. I'm not here to say that because I don't know. I don't know what it's like. I didn't like the way he handled it. I thought it was offensive to military personnel, and that bothered me at first. But at the very least, if you didn't like what Kaepernick was doing, you had to respect his conviction to it. He stuck through it, through the noise, through the haters, through the interviews, through the questions, through the whole season, through the injuries, home and road. He did it. He did it all the time, and you had to at least respect his commitment to it. Well, now he's going to change the stance. Why? Because he needs a job now, right? Colin Kaepernick opts out of his 49ers deal. Colin Kaepernick is now a free agent. Pretty easy to have conviction and hold your ground when you're making $14 million and on a roster. But now when you're a free agent and you need to cater to a bunch of other organizations that worry about if you're a distraction, now this is no longer an issue? Have the social norms changed so much in the last 6 months that now the issues that were issues in August are no longer issues?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question to be asking. The problem here, I'll give him just a partial pass here, and the only reason is because he did have a player option where he could have stayed with the Niners and picked up another $13 million this year. And he has a lot of money. So he could have just said, I'll collect my paycheck. I'm on the books for $13 million. I'm going to stay here, and I'll continue letting this be my priority. He could have done that. Had he chosen to stay and collect his check and then still not do it, I would have been more upset. But I'm with you. It feels like suddenly it's not his priority. It feels like suddenly all the things he said about it now mean less because he wants to go collect a check somewhere else. I feel like my issue with him all along was, if you're going to be somebody who wants to make this their foremost priority and be one of the faces of this movement and where we're trying to get to a new place as a society, that's fine. He had so many ducks not in an order in other places in his life, it bothered me. Like, I didn't like what he was doing because I felt like it was disingenuous and you could prove that through things he posted on social media or other things he would do. It made it feel like you're saying the right things, but your actions actually tell me that what you're saying is not totally the truth. This continues that pattern. You said that this is my number one priority. Your number one priority has now taken a back seat to making sure you get a starting NFL quarterback job.
Yes, that's exactly how I feel. It feels like if I was someone who was a social rights activist, white, black, green, orange, it doesn't matter. Right. If I was someone who supported his cause, it feels like I was sold out here so he could have a spot in the NFL and so he didn't look like a distraction. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN. Brady and Jake in for Jeff and Bernie. We got about a minute here before we got to go to break, so I'll ask you this, and this is a question I probably shouldn't ask you with only a minute left. You talk about other guys who are distractions or guys who have issues. Joe Mixon and I forget the guy's name from Baylor. He's the wide receiver, but they're two guys who have off-field issues. Joe Mixon, he punched out a woman in college. We know the story now. And the kid from Baylor, he beat up a dog and it was on video. These guys were not invited to the NFL Combine. Should they have been?
No, if I'm the NFL, I'm not inviting them. And if I'm the NFL, they're not playing in my league. It's a private organization. We get to choose who plays in this league. It's not a requirement that anybody gets to play. Now, I know they don't go down that road because talent rules the day in the NFL. But if I'm the NFL, there's no chance after reading Mixon's story. Now, do people make mistakes? Certainly they make mistakes. Mistakes have consequences, and they have consequences that are lasting. This guy, he didn't just punch a woman out, which is bad enough. He punched his pregnant wife in the stomach and threw her down the stairs.
No, that was Tyreek Hill.
No, this is also Mixon.
Mixon's got two separate incidences.
I believe so. We'll confirm as we go to break. But to me, regardless, they're horrific situations. They're not just mistakes. This isn't the gas mask pot device we saw last year during the draft.
Rotunzel.
Okay, that's ridiculous. And you're looking to make, you know, $20 million a year and you just cost yourself a lot of money. That's a mistake. At some point, the NFL has to say, you're just not welcome if you make these mistakes. We're sorry. You can find other places in life. You can excel. You can find other opportunities. We aren't open to it.
The bottom line is this, and it's unfortunate. The NFL won't say that. The NFL will welcome these players into the league. Tyreek Hill's on a roster, and Tyreek Hill punched his pregnant girlfriend, and Greg Hardy was allowed to play, and Ray Rice would have been allowed to play if someone would give him a job. I think I want these guys at the Combine because of the strenuous interview process. Give the evaluator. They're going to be in a league. They're going to be on a roster in September, whether you like it or not. They're going to be on a roster in September. give at least the NFL executives a chance to get to know them. Now people have to go out of their way. And maybe that was the issue all – maybe that was the idea all along. We'll make it harder for you to draft them. You've got to spend your own money
right, and
go out to get to know them. You've got to go fly to them. You've got to organize plane schedules and do all this. At least if you brought them to the combine, you got everybody there, and they could go through the gamut and answer every single team's questions, and at least guys would have an idea. They're going to be in the league next year, whether you like it or not. Why are we excluding them now when they won't be excluded in September? You don't have to like what they did. No one likes what they did. I don't like what they did. But they're going to be in the league, so you might as well let them in now so at least they can go through the questioning in front of every team and every executive.
Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN.
So that's the goodbye music that
Love
we have.
And
in the spirit of Dave Hunter not being here, we're still going to play it. But you know what? I left us like no time to actually do it. So Action Jackson, Jake, thanks for being here. This is Brady. We're back on Monday with The Huddle, live from Patrick Gym, 101.3 ESPN.
WCPV, Essex, Burlington, Plattsburgh.
This is Bob Emery, head coach of Plattsburgh State Men's Ice Hockey. And you're listening to my Champlain Valley station for sports, 101.3 ESPN.
Winter may conjure visions of blankets, naps, and movie marathons.
Looking at a foot and a half of snow. The current temperature is -8.
But not this year. It's time to zip up your parka, grab your snowshoes, and snap on some goggles.
Yes!
Because McDonald's is helping you